Welcome to the Pint and Click podcast. I'm Dave. I'm here with Jamie and Tony. And today we're going to do something a little different. We're going to talk about things that we do not recommend. Often on this podcast, it's things that we like, things that we want to share. But this time it's going to be a little fun, a little different. It's going to be things that are disappointing, things that are not living up to the hype, or things that are just outright bad. So we're going to start off talking about individual topics a little bit. Then we're going to get into a discussion of Terminator Genesis at the end, which we all watched over the past week or so, or years or so, or whenever it was. But we got Tony going first. Tony, what do you not recommend?
Sure. Well, I'm going to be talking about the Kindle Fire today, and I don't recommend it because I think the primary reason is going to be that it locks you into an ecosystem that is very consumer-driven and less creative and less for the tech-savvy. And I think now identifying as both maybe a creative and a tech-savvy person, I realized that it was a wrong direction for me to go into. Regardless of 2 years ago when I got this Kindle Fire, I was doing it as like a professional development. Like I needed to learn the Kindle because I thought, oh, I'm going to be helping people with a Kindle. But so let me give you some insight into like the specs of this machine. So 2 years ago, they came out with this, what's called a Kindle Fire HDX. And there was like a 7-inch and a 9-inch. And they're very similar to the iPad and the iPad mini. But the Kindle Fire HDX has a superior resolution. And this came out in like 2014, I want to say, or even 2013, which seems early, but they really put a lot of computing power and a lot of really good resolution on the screen in this particular model. So it still plays games like Hearthstone really well, which is actually contrasted with the present generation of Kindles that are actually slower in processor speed and actually have a worse resolution on their screen. So for those reasons, actually alone, I think it's like, sure, you're getting for $80 or $50 price point, or on sale even cheaper, you're getting something that looks like an iPad, but it doesn't perform in the same way pretty much at all. I mean, the very most you can do is stream maybe a video, and it's not going to be in HD of any kind.
Do they not have the HD models anymore?
They still do have an HD model, but I was looking at it, and I have like a comparison chart printed out. It's still sub features to the HDX that came out in 2014.
And do they not sell the HDX anymore?
So HDX came out in 2013, and the 2015 models, which are in the store at Amazon now, have like much fewer resolution. Like the resolution was 1920 by 1200 in the HDX 7, which is a 7-inch tablet. And then the same HD 8-inch tablet now actually has a much worse resolution of 800 by 1280. So it's just an interesting fact that they decided not to upgrade their system at all. It's almost like you're getting even more the bare minimum of what they could offer just in order to get this piece of merchandise in your hands. And it is like a merchandise, but it's also like you're getting kind of a storefront in your hands. Obviously, I don't know if this is common sense to everybody, but you know, Amazon's strategy is just to get everybody to have these so that their digital goods are just so much easier to purchase. And so you're going to be buying or consuming Amazon Prime Music from this. You're going to be consuming the video and your Amazon Prime Video. So it really benefits people that are already paying $100 a year to access all those things. So where they really majorly fail is that they don't link up with Google Docs very well at all. Like I can read my Google Docs there, but I can't actually edit them, not even from a browser. So that really frustrates me. And there's just no good app that works. You can try sideloading apps in, but I don't want to do that because there's so many app updates that you would work twice as hard to get a product that was worse than if I were to just use a different device completely. So I'll just use my phone for Docs or Sheets or something. So that's my main qualm with it. There are some redeeming qualities of this device because it is the older model. It is faster. I can still play games like Hearthstone or a puzzle game or something like that. It's really simple to do that. It's simple to, you know, if I want to see what's even in the Netflix catalog or what's in the Amazon catalog, I can use this as kind of a device to, oh, what should I watch later or what should I just test out and see if it's any good. Overall, though, the Fire experience is, it doesn't feel so much like I have a tablet or a computer because I'm locked out of so many of the cool things I can do. I know I could do on an Android or something, and I'm locked out of all these things. So it feels like, and actually, I put a quote here that I read today while I was reading about Terminator Genesis. It feels like Amazon is the global operating system, which is embraced by the public. That if we hand over power to to just something and we don't have control of our own computing devices, that we may end up being controlled by that system and not really having our own freedom of creating our own media, et cetera. So I just thought it was very fitting that we're doing Terminator Genesis today.
Because you're just essentially buying into their monopoly over everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, over digital goods especially. Yeah. So
I wonder if they're not having these, you know, an HDX type version, a newer one, because there isn't the market for those higher end ones, that if people are going to spend a couple $100, they might as well just buy a better tablet, whereas people want to buy a $40 tablet for their kids or something. I mean, they're so cheap now, the low level ones. So I guess if you're, it makes sense for those people who aren't trying to have any creativity and just want things to be easy as possible. Mm-hmm. I have the basic Kindle Fire, and it was only about $50, and I never use mine for similar reasons. I tried to get Google Docs to work on it, and it was such a cumbersome process, and then just sideloading everything was so difficult, and those are your basic things that you need, a word processing type of anything. Right,
something that's in the cloud, and it's easy to get to.
I feel like if you're already totally bought into the Amazon universe, and that's all you want, and you go into knowing that.
Right. But if you do end up with a Kindle anyway, because you got it as a gift, I mean, you can still go on lynda.com and watch those videos. You can still use Evernote, works great on it. Like, I mean, there are things I still do on it. You know, reading ebooks, checking out ebooks through the OverDrive app is still quite easy to do on a Kindle. Mm-hmm. So all kind of synergize with the library, even though they're totally different systems.
Sure.
So if you do get a Kindle, don't, you know, all hope is not lost. There's still other ways. This isn't a podcast right now about guilting you about what you got or what you gave somebody.
All right, Tony, thank you. We'll move on to Jamie. Jamie, what are you talking about today that you do not recommend?
I'm going to talk about the Harry Potter Plus universe, I would say, which is anything that J.K. Rowling has put out that is Harry Potter related that is not books 1 through 7. And I guess more than not recommending it, I would say I personally don't hate it, because there are plenty of people out there who love her digital platform, Pottermore, which is just, you know, this wizarding world that you can interact in. You can get sorted into houses and you can read short stories on. So it's kind of like a video game, but also kind of like a video reading experience that she has that's online. And people love that. And people love Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, which is the new play that was put out this year. And I'm sure people are going to love Fantastic Beasts, the new movie that just came out too. But personally, I am of the opinion, put out your books and be done with it, JK. I think the difficulty for me is especially when it comes to her tweets. JK is an avid tweeter, and that's fine, but she sometimes will do ones that give out information about characters in the book. And for me, seeing those things in tweets, information about these characters that I grew up with and that I loved, really detracts from it.
Sure.
To see little bits of nuggets of information in between, you know, like different sports scores and things like that. Because I feel like a book goes through so many levels of editing process. Mm-hmm. You think about it forever. You, the writer, put so much effort into that, so many drafts, and then it goes to your agent and your editors, and it gets culled down over and over again. So you're mulling about these decisions, whereas you could be tweeting at 3 a.m. and just deciding, oh, you know, this character was sorted into this house, and then you tweet it out. And maybe you regret that later, you know? There's no process for that. But I think even more than that, the world beyond the books is so much part of the reader's imagination. And I think every bit of new information kind of takes some of that like magic away from it. Harry Potter is so magical, and that's what people love about it. But with every layer that gets unpeeled back, you kind of see the woman behind the curtain a little more.
Sure.
And that takes away the reader's creative freedom. And I think I'm just at this point where I'm like, JK, let it go. Write more Robert Galbraith mysteries. You know, do other things. Like, put Harry Potter to bed. And I feel this way about most things. I don't like extra textual material in anything, but I think I feel so vehemently about this because I love Harry Potter. I think I was maybe 8 when the first book came out. I graduated college the year the last book came out. So I felt like I aged with Harry. So I feel very strongly about it. And to have this kind of the mystique getting ripped away piece by piece kind of makes me upset, I would say. But I love J.K. Rowling, but at the same time, I just want to like grab her hands and say, like, step away from the laptop. No more tweeting out information. No more extra material. So that's my personal opinion.
It sounds like bits like that don't evolve the character, don't expand the universe. It's just kind of like putting stickers on the book, like, oh, and here's a factoid.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like if these bits of information were important, they would have been in the story to begin with.
Sure.
Every writer has so much information that just doesn't make it into the final book because each book would be a million pages long. But the important part makes it through. And I think the other stuff she's giving us is kind of just like data. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's not making the character deeper or richer in a significant way. And kind of in some cases, like negating our feelings about a book where she apologizes for the deaths of certain characters.
Yeah.
Things like that. I think I'm of the school that believes that a text or a book exists separate from the author, that when a book is put into the world, it doesn't necessarily belong to the author anymore. It belongs, you know, to the response of the readers. And I guess I see her other material as fan fiction, like its own fan fiction. Like, sure. I give it the weight as someone else creating it. Like, yeah, it might be great. It might be wonderful. I might even love one of the things she does in the future, but it's not canon to me.
I think even the medium kind of represents that, because I was on Pottermore a little bit and I enjoyed it because it's kind of like a collection of short fiction in a lot of ways. And short fiction is a lot more approachable than when the Harry Potter books start getting bigger and bigger. Even though they're kids' books, I have a hard time getting through all of them. Like, I've never read all the way through them. But I could approach Pottermore, as it's pretty easy to get to. Because of the fact that the format is on the internet, it does seem more ephemeral. Like, it it feels like, well, I may have read this thing about the houses of magic in America or something, but what if that changes before a book is written about it?
Exactly.
And, you know, so that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I think maybe if something was published and about it, about maybe about different characters, are you against that too? Like, her using the same world again, like in Fantastic Beasts and how and Where to Find Them?
I don't think so. I think for me, like, if she wrote an eighth book, I wouldn't be necessarily as against that, but I think it's this idea of all this random bits of knowledge existing in different formats and different platforms, and only certain groups access some of this information. So it seems very all over the place, I think, and then limited. Like, it exists now, but if that tweet's deleted, does this thing still happen to this character? I don't know. I mean, so I just consider it all not canon.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, none of it is a narrative. It's information, it's sentences, but it's not a story. There's no arc. It's just like flashes of plot that are not tied together.
It doesn't cohere in any way. And I think that is the difficulty, too, is that you don't have to think about it in a coherent manner, which makes it easy just to throw out whatever you want out there. But you don't have to give it that deep thought of how does this affect the character? How did this affect the character in the past? So, would not recommend.
All right. Well, thank you, Jamie. I'm going to talk about The Dark Knight Rises, the third in the Christopher Nolan franchise of Batman. There are only a couple things in this world that I hate. One of them is Ready Player One, but we've already talked about that. So we're going to talk about Dark Knight Rises. To preface it, I liked Batman Begins a lot, and I love The Dark Knight. Dark Knight's one of my top five favorite movies. I think it's phenomenal. I think it's nuanced and subtle, in addition to being in your face with bravado in that movie. The Dark Knight Rises came much later because of the unfortunate death of Heath Ledger. They had a plan for a third movie with him as the Joker again, but it did not come to pass. And so they kind of scrambled to say, well, we've agreed to do a third movie. What's it going to be? And what they came up with is a mess. The plot does not make sense. It is filled with plot holes, big and small. I didn't like some of the acting. I didn't like some of the characterization. I left the theater mad yelling about this movie, how much it upset me. The plot is silly. From Bruce Wayne loses all his money, there's a terrorist attack on the stock market, and Bruce Wayne loses all his money, and no one thinks to put two and two together and wonder if these things are connected. His back is broken by Bane, and he's sent off to a prison in the desert where some guy ties ropes to him and makes him does push-ups and pull-ups, and all of a sudden his vertebrae are fixed. That's not how backs work. To the 6 months, supposedly, that the city is under siege, where all the cops are underground due to an explosives that were mixed with concrete and placed throughout the city when fixing potholes and tunnels and things. All the cops, which is thousands of cops, right? What about the cops who are off duty? What about the cops who lived in Jersey? Like, what's going on here? These things. So a lot of the movie had a lot of these big sweeping things. Bruce Wayne's back is completely broken, but it's fixed, and all the cops are gone, and there's no gray area, and all his money is gone, and there's no one who suspects that maybe there's foul play. To Bruce Wayne comes back, and he shows up, he's back, he's the Batman, the city's going to blow up at any minute, and he takes, I don't know, a couple hours to paint a giant flaming bat on the side of the bridge? Like, so that he could inspire the people who are underground and can't even see it. I didn't understand that at all. So the plot is silly. It's unconnected. It's kind of grand when it can't be. This idea of the entire city and all the cops and all the people. And how did basic services work for 6 weeks? Did they have water and sewage and food? I'm sitting here wondering about these things instead of enjoying Batman beating people up. So all of those things frustrated me. There is a moment where Bane and his group leave the stock exchange or whatever it is. I think it's the exchange. And they go off on a motorcycle chase, and Batman comes in beside them, and it's very exciting. And when they leave the stock exchange, it's morning, but they go under a bridge for a minute, and when they come out the other side, it's night, it's dark, and they're surrounded by police cars and helicopters. And it's like, how did this... This is like Ed Wood. This is ancient, bad movie making. And it somehow made it into this movie. I don't know. My friends joke that maybe Gotham City only gets 10 minutes of daylight anyway. So maybe that's what's going on. I thought it was Manhattan or Chicago, but it might be in the Arctic Circle. But they only get, you know, Batman works so hard because it's 23 and a half hours of night every day. Catwoman, I didn't like it all. Catwoman was all one-liners. It was all sexual jokes and, you know, half flirtation. And flip remarks. That was all Catwoman was. It reminds me of Arnold Schwarzenegger in Batman and Robin, where everyone complains that all his lines are one-liners. They're all puns. It's not a dialogue. And I'm watching Catwoman and thinking, this is the exact same thing happening in this modern movie. And that really let me down. So Dark Knight Rises, it drives me up the wall. I hate it when it comes on TV because I have to watch it and yell about how bad it is. All my friends know how much I hate it. And now all of you kind people know how much I hate it as well.
What were your expectations going into it, seeing how you loved the first two, but knowing that they had to redo kind of the whole idea for it?
My expectations were certainly high.
Okay.
Even though like people were already making fun of the Bane voice before I went in, I kind of brushed all that off and said, I still believe in Nolan. I still believe this can be a good movie. So I certainly expected a lot more from this movie, maybe than it deserved.
Well, and I wonder just how does a director like Christopher Nolan, I mean, he's obviously signed up maybe for that trilogy, but how did he end up with such a beast of a movie to have to try to salvage and then totally, I mean, I don't know if he wrote this one in addition to directing it.
I think he co-wrote it with Goyer. If you'll recall, he did Inception between Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises. Okay. So they took all of that time. That was years of time to develop the script, I suppose.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, it just feels to me like they should have just let it go
and
moved on and not bothered with a third movie rather than try to do something that was just a mess. And I feel like he should have recognized it was a mess when he read the script, but I don't know. I'm not a director myself. I can't speak to that, obviously, but
yeah, I'm just curious just because of I like most of everything else that Christopher Nolan has done.
I do too, very much. Like I say, I still like Dark Knight. I can kind of forgive him for this movie that, you know, you can make a bad movie and you can also make a good movie. I don't hate all his other movies as a product of this, but this one just sticks out. And sometimes I wake up at night thinking about Dark Knight Rises. It won't leave me alone.
It won't leave me alone.
No. So that's my feelings on Dark Knight Rises. I do not recommend Dark Knight Rises. I do recommend The Dark Knight. If you haven't seen it before, it's fantastic.
So you think people can just watch the first two and just pretend that the third one, just don't watch the third one?
I would instruct them to, yes. I absolutely would. I do recommend the first two and then just let it go. Just don't even bother with the third one. I think that's the way to go. All right, well, speaking of bad movies,
we're not letting it go.
We're going to talk about Terminator Genisys, which is the fifth movie in the Terminator franchise after they stopped numbering. This one is remarkable because Arnold's back in a big way. He was obviously key in the first one and the second one. I don't even remember if he was in the third.
He was in the third one, just not in Salvation at all, except for one scene that he was CG'd onto a naked Terminator body.
Right. So they kind of let him go, but now he's back for Terminator Genisys. I watched it just this morning because I put it off for the last minute. It was very difficult for me to get up and watch what I was told was going to be a bad movie. But what do we think of Terminator Genisys?
I did not hate it, I would say. I went into it thinking I was going to hate it more than I did, but I think the parts I hate about it are more conceptual of the idea of the time travel and then the going back and that whole idea that keeps coming up in the end of, we'll reboot this movie and it'll be okay because we'll do some time shift and then we can ignore all the other plot things we had and just restart it. I don't like that. But as for the movie itself, it was not as terrible as I was expecting, or it could have been.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they include enough action in there to, like, move scenes forward, but the whole movie isn't just that action. I think that's one of the things I appreciated about it, was, like, they give you a lot of Terminator versus Terminator action, but then it wasn't really easy to predict because there were, like, things like time travel and changing their plans, and maybe that was the thing that I thought was working the most against it, was, like, from where you start to where you finish. And it's been a while since I've seen this movie, but it's really choppy.
Yeah.
It doesn't really have a coherent, like, I mean, you kind of go back to the beginning when you get to the end, but you had no idea what was going on in that first scene where there's a Terminator in their midst and something goes horribly wrong during this first time travel sequence. But I think overall they did a pretty good job of just bringing in all of the moving pieces of the Terminator franchise, except for, I don't remember if they did giant robots, because that was in Salvation, but I'm happy that they left that out. There were, like, there were a lot of running from giant monstrous robots in the Christian Bale one, Terminator Salvation. But as a fan of Terminator, I thought this stood pretty good. It kind of stood on par with Terminator 3, which was a little less than Terminator 2, which is my favorite.
But. Yeah, I'm a little split on this movie. I'm hot and cold. I kind of enjoyed watching it, but it's a mess. If you haven't seen it, they start in the future in 2030-something, I think. Then they go
29, I think.
Okay, yeah. 2029. Then they go back to 1984, 84. And then they come forward to the present day, or 2017, so close to the present day. So first, you got to follow all of that, where they are and what's going on. And then second, there's flashbacks to when Kyle Reese was a kid and when Sarah Connor was a kid, back to 1970-something when she met Pops, the kind of the old Terminator that, that protects her throughout her life. So one, you got to keep up with that, the time travel. Two, the entire movie is a scene of action and then a scene of exposition and then a scene of action and then a scene of exposition. That's all it is. Characters don't really develop. No. There's not really a story arc so much as it's a sprint to the climax. We have to stop Skynet. And they go into the past and into the future, which is our present, trying to stop Skynet. But, like, things don't really happen along the way. They just kind of go do it. And so I think that can be tiring, is that the action, when it happens, it's good. I enjoy it. But it's just exposition, just describing what's going on, explaining what's going on, explaining what Terminators are. If you haven't seen Terminator 1 and 2, I have no idea how you understand this movie.
No. And all the shot-for-shot kind of remakes of that and all the self-referential bits, if was this supposed to be like a reboot for the next generation? Like, was that the idea that, you know, younger people could see this and then it would get Terminator started again? Like, was that the idea?
I've heard something similar to that, that it's been remade for an international audience now. Is that, like, this is happening with a lot of these blockbuster movies, is that it's a popular IP, so they're remaking it more in a way that doesn't really need complex translation. It'll translate well because it's action-based.
Because I was thinking, if it's a reboot for a new audience, you wouldn't understand what was happening at all. There's just way too much. Even though they have, you know, like the 5-minute long narration at the beginning to try to sum everything up, you wouldn't get it. I mean, I've seen the first two and I barely got what was happening in the timeline. I was so confused.
But even then, things happen, like T-1000 show up in Shapeshift. And like, if you don't know that they can do that and that these are also robots that come from the future from Terminator 2 and Terminator 3, then you can't just wade straight into this movie and be like, oh, I know that this is a 1000 and he's an 800 and he's the earlier model, and like all of that is, they try to explain it by just like shouting things at you. Like, there's a part where Sarah Connor says, "Don't forget they can shapeshift," and it's like she's shouting at the audience. I also read that there's a major twist in this movie that was actually spoiled by one of the trailers. Which sounds upsetting to me, that it was kind of a good twist, kind of interesting play on a character, but they just made it obvious in one of the trailers before the movie came out that, guess what, John Connor's a Terminator.
How does that get passed?
Yeah, committee. Like.
Yeah, I don't know. It sounds like it would have been a really cool experience to be in the theater. There's a moment where Arnold shoots him, And Reese yells out, you know, that was your plan from the beginning, was just to get close to John Connor and kill him. And there's a moment there where you're like, oh, was it really? Oh, mm-hmm. I don't know. But the trailer totally ruined that moment.
Yeah. That's funny because I'm almost certain that the same exact thing happened with Terminator Salvation. There was a human, he was still half human, and they implanted like cybernetic, like transformer, like core to him. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure they spoiled that in the preview too. Like, yeah. I feel like this happened before. And if it did, I can't understand their strategy. Like, it was a cool character. It was probably one of the coolest parts of that movie. And I knew it was going to happen, and it made it, like, less cool.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the reveal of, like, taking a decent character away or, like, giving them this extra threat to the main mm-hmm. group or to the resistance or whatever. But, yeah, that seems like a misstep by them.
Yeah, so between all the things, between the convoluted time travel plot, basically just so that old Arnold Schwarzenegger makes sense. Like, that's the whole reason. Mm-hmm. That's the whole reason they came up with this. Oh, mm-hmm. well, he goes back to the past, and we don't know why. Who sent you? Oh, I don't know. It was erased. And don't think about that. Right. Just, I'm old now. What are you going to do? They had to come up with a reason.
Is that supposed to be like a, so that they can have the next movie explain
maybe,
that? Is
maybe.
There going to still be a next
yes,
movie?
Yes, I
expect
so.
There will be a okay. next movie. I don't know for sure, but I haven't read anything about mm-hmm. it,
right.
a new plot or a new title or anything like that. But I expect there will be another mm-hmm. movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so on the pro side, the action sequences I think are pretty good. It's kind of silly where they are and what they're doing sometimes. You know, the set pieces are a little strange. Mm-hmm. They're in a hospital near an MRI machine, and then they're in a school bus on the Golden Gate Bridge. All that's very interesting. There's not a lot of nuance to the Terminator characters, though. So Terminator mm-hmm. 2 was all about the nuance of that machine trying to be more human for the sake of fitting in, for the sake of not standing mm-hmm. out, but mm-hmm. learning to make jokes and learning facial expressions and mm-hmm. things like that. That kind of none of that happened in this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, you had a couple of weird characters. Like, you had the weird ghosty vision of Skynet. Mm-hmm. And then you had Matt Smith in the future as the living embodiment of Skynet, whatever that was. Like, I thought they'd do something with those characters a little mm-hmm. bit, but mm-hmm. they really didn't.
Yeah.
Unfortunate. I don't think any character developed in this.
No. Like, when you have recent Sarah Connor, and he's like, but I love you or something at one point, you're like, mm-hmm. when did this happen? Like, we were here the whole time.
Yeah,
she's so, what?
He loved her before he even went back in time. Yeah. Oh, John, you told me so much about her.
Yeah.
All right. So, like, they didn't have time to fall in love, so they threw that pitch out there mm-hmm. and said, he's already in love, so whatever, don't worry about it.
And even, like, Pops and Sarah Connor's relationship could have been really poignant, you know, mm-hmm. and to see, like, as this father figure, and it changes the dynamic and everything. But the most poignant part for me was when we see those pictures of her that she drew as a child with, like, her and the Terminator, like a grand drawing in the house. I was like, oh. And that was, like, the most, you know, mm-hmm. because they just – it was just, like, the name Pops. It didn't –
It fell back on the Terminator 2 move where he looks like a bad Terminator, so mm-hmm. people try to shoot him with guns. Mm-hmm. And in Terminator 2, it was John Connor saying, no, no, he's okay. Mm-hmm. In this movie, it was Sarah Connor saying, no, no, he's okay. Mm-hmm. They did that whole thing all over again. Mm-hmm. As opposed to having any sort of special, like, Pops should, you'd think after 30 years, he'd be more human than mm-hmm. he was in Terminator 2.
Right. Mm-hmm.
After a couple days or whatever that was.
Mm-hmm. But it's still that same smile. It's still, the same.
Yeah, they didn't develop any of that.
No. They could have even developed more of that bond between Sarah mm-hmm. Connor, and it wasn't really represented necessarily scene by scene. Mm-hmm. It kind of a business-like relationship.
And
so.
The dialogue, too, speaking of dialogue, it's just like all canned and kind of, even the ones that weren't supposed to be references or jokes itself, all just seemed kind of like a parody or a mm-hmm. joke, everything.
Like they're almost trying to repeat the exact same scene, just slightly tweak the characters, like you were saying. So, mm-hmm. That's probably part of it, is they're forcing some kind of a structure over something that isn't quite its own story yet anyway, so...
Yeah, so ultimately, we do not recommend this movie. I do not recommend this movie.
Yeah, I don't think I do either.
Yeah, I would not recommend this movie. Like I said, I didn't hate it.
Yeah, it was not horrible.
But I would never be like, oh, watch this movie.
Yeah, take this home.
You love Terminator 1 and 2. Watch this one, you know?
Yeah, no, go back and watch Terminator 2 instead. Mm-hmm. And I think you'll have a much better time than with Terminator Genesis.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was our fun little experiment with things that we don't recommend. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back to our regular format next time, I think. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.